over to Anki Jai. Videyaha! Our king, Nimi, or Nimi Maharaj. Tan, them. Abhipraitya, recognizing. Narayana Parayanan, as devotees whose only goal was Narayana. Pritaha, satisfied. Sampujayam, Chakre, he fully worshipped them. Asanastan, who had been seated. Yathar arhataha, as they deserved. Translation. King Videha Nimi understood that the nine sages were exalted devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, overjoyed at their auspicious arrival, he offered them suitable sitting places and worshipped them in a proper way, just as one would worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you can repeat, King Videha Nimi understood that the nine sages were exalted devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, overjoyed at their auspicious arrival, he offered them suitable sitting places and worshipped them in a proper way, just as one would worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As a purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The word yathar hatoha is significant here. According to Vishwanatha Chakravarti, the word yathar hatoha means yato chitam, or according to the proper etiquette. It is clearly mentioned here that the Nava Yogendras are Narayana Parayana, exalted devotees of the Supreme Lord Narayana or Krishna. Therefore, the word yathar hatoha indicates that the king worshipped the nine sages according to the standard Vaishnav etiquette. The etiquette for worshipping exalted Vaishnavas is expressed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur with the words Sakshad Dari Tvena Samasta Shastrahai. An exalted Vaishnava being totally surrendered to the will of the Supreme Lord is taken to be a transparent medium for the Lord's will. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that even by a moment's association with the pure devotees of the Lord, one can achieve all perfection in life. Therefore, as indicated by the word pritaha, King Nimi was overjoyed by the auspicious arrival of the sages, and therefore he worshipped them just as one would worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although impersonalist philosophers claim that every living entity is equal to God, they callously step over the heads of their so-called spiritual masters and freely speculate on the nature of the Absolute, giving their own whimsical opinions in defiance of the impersonal whims of their so-called gurus. In other words, although Mayavadi impersonalists claim that everyone is God, they ultimately show an offensive mentality towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead in rejecting the reality of His eternal form and pastimes. Thus, they unwittingly belittle the eternal position of the living beings by denying their eternal personality and activities in the kingdom of God. The impersonalists, through their mental concoctions, try to minimize the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities who are part of Him, reducing them theoretically to a formless, nameless light, which by their concoction they claim to be the Absolute God. The Vaishnavas, however, welcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead and easily understand that the unlimited Supreme Personality has nothing to do with the conditioned, limited, mundane personalities we find in the material world. The impersonalists arrogantly assume that there could not be any transcendental or unlimited personality beyond their present experience. But the Vaishnavas intelligently understand that there are many wonderful things far beyond our limited experience. Therefore, they accept the words of Krishna, who states in the Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter, text 19, Yomam eva masa muto janati purusho tamam sasarva ved bajati mam sarva bhavena bharata. Whoever knows me is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without doubting, is the knower of everything, and he therefore engages himself in full devotional service, O son of Bharata. In this connection, Srila Prabhupada states, there are many philosophical speculations about the constitutional position of the living entities and the Supreme Absolute Truth. Now in this verse, the Supreme Personality of Godhead clearly explains that anyone who knows Lord Krishna as the Supreme Person is actually the knower of everything. The imperfect knower goes on speculating about the absolute truth, but the perfect knower, without wasting his valuable time, engages directly in Krishna consciousness, the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. It is not that one should simply speculate academically. One should submissively hear from Bhagavad Gita that these living entities are always subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyone who is able to understand this according to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, knows the purpose of the Vedas. No one else knows the purpose of the Vedas. Therefore, exalted devotees such as the nine Yogendras always accept the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as expressed here by the word Narayana Parayanan. King Nimi was a Vaishnava, and therefore he worshipped the great sages with the same respect with which he would worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as shown by the word Yatharhataha. Although impersonalists falsely claim that every living entity is equal to God, they cannot properly respect any living being because of their original offense at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality. Therefore, their so-called worship, even of their own gurus, is ultimately self-serving and opportunistic. When an impersonalist imagines that he can become God, or he has become God, he has no further need for a so-called guru. The Vaishnava, however, because he accepts the supremacy of the eternal personality of Godhead, is ready and willing to offer eternal respect to all living beings, especially to those most fortunate living beings who have achieved shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. The Vaishnava's worship of the Lord's representative is not self-serving or opportunistic, but is an expression of eternal love for the Lord and his representatives, as indicated here by the word Pritaha. Therefore, it is clear from this verse that not only the nine exalted sons of Rishabhadeva, but also King Nimi himself, were the all great devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in defiance of the artificial and limited concept of impersonalism. Vidyasthana vipretya narayana parayanan Pritta Sampujayan Chakre Asanastan Yatar Hataha. So, Omagana Timuranda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, just a little history here. Lord Rishabhadev, he had 100 sons. The sons were headed up by Bharat Maharaj, and I think you all know the history of Bharat Maharaj, who first of all worshipped Krishna, became a deer, then took birth as Jatabharata, and ultimately instructed King Rahugana, and then went back to home, back to Godhead. And then in addition to Bharat Maharaj, you had nine sons who became the kings of all the different islands, actually the whole world is called Navadvipa, in addition to the Mayapur Dham. And then you had these Navayogendras, the nine pure devotees of the Lord who worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, traveled all over the world, and actually they traveled without any clothes, just like the four Kumaras. So very few people recognized that they were pure devotees of the Lord, because you recognize a pure devotee by the speaking and not so much by the appearance. And in addition, the rest of the sons were engaged in fruitive activities, karmakandhya activities. So here we're talking about the nine sons who were pure devotees of the Lord, and then being received by King Nimi. King Nimi, incidentally, was the predecessor of the whole dynasty in which Janaka Maharaj appeared. And Janaka Maharaj, of course, is the father of Sita Devi. I think everybody knows that, right? And there's a whole interesting story about King Nimi I'm not going to tell right now. Maybe I should tell, but it's how King Nimi actually went back to Godhead And his body was churned. That's not telling the whole story, just a little bit. His body was churned by the sages after he went back to Godhead. And they got the first Janaka from that churning. And that was Janaka the first, and then it was Janaka the second after that, just like you have in the Western world, the kings and the queens, they're Elizabeth the first, Elizabeth the second, Henry the first, and you all know about Henry the eighth, right? So he was the eighth Henry. In England, that's quite prominent. Like if you have a child and your name is John, then your child's name will be John Jr. or something, or John the second, and then John the third will be his child. So anyway, so Janaka was the father of Sita Devi, but he was many times removed from King Nemi. He was like Janaka the 15th or 16th. I don't know the exact number. So this is somewhat of the history. So the point being brought out in this verse is quite important, and that's the point of Vaishnav hospitality. And as mentioned in the purport, the hospitality that Vaishnava has is not just for other Vaishnavas. Of course, that is special hospitality. But the hospitality is given for all living entities. And I'm going to tell a story to illustrate that. But before I tell the story, I'll just quote from Lord Kapiladev, where Lord Kapiladev... is it Lord Kapiladev? No, actually it's in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where it states that if one has a guest, any guest that comes to your house, whether a Vaishnava or not a Vaishnava, and even if you serve them, but if you don't serve them with a proper attitude, in other words, you look at them, like, why are you eating so much food? Why have you come when I was just getting ready to enjoy life or take rest or do something like that? Then what happens is the vultures of hell, when you go to the Yamadutas, will pluck your eyeballs out. So even if you do receive a guest, but if you don't receive them with the right attitude, you get a heavy reaction. And referring to Lord Kapiladev says that if you don't respect all living entities or the Lord in the heart of all living entities, your deity worship is like offering oblations to ashes. In other words, it's useless. You follow that? So in other words, if you're a Kanishta Adhikari is one who sees Krishna in the deity form, but he doesn't recognize that Krishna's outside of the temple. Krishna is in everyone's heart, and in fact, he's in every atom. Then his worship is not actually accepted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in order to have your worship accepted by the Lord, you have to at least become a Majjhima Adhikari, or at least accepted in terms of deity worship. So, Majjhima Adhikari, of course, is one who worships the Lord, he makes friends with Krishna's devotees, he helps or gives mercy to the innocent, and to those who are envious, he avoids them. He doesn't hate them. One time I was giving a class, and I made that point, and one devotee argued with me. He said, well, we should hate those who are envious. That's not the point, because a Vaishnava is ajata shatrava. A Vaishnava has no enemies and doesn't hate anyone. Hating is not in a Vaishnava's vocabulary or in a Vaishnava's mentality to hate someone. He may avoid someone, and even if he's a kshatri, he may kill someone. But as far as hating, if he's actually a pure devotee of the Lord, he doesn't hate anyone because he sees the Lord in everyone's heart. Anyway, so even if we're receiving someone who is not Krishna conscious, we have to receive them nicely. And I'll give you a practical example. Once upon a time, there was a great king. His name was Ranti Dev. You've all heard of Ranti Dev before? And Ranti Dev was engaged upon a fast for so many days. It was something like 40-something days. He was engaged in this fast, Sometimes devotees, and not nowadays we don't engage in these sorts of fasts anymore. At most we fast for the whole day on appearance days of the Supreme Personality. God, like we're coming upon Lord Nrisingadev's appearance day, where he's supposed to fast till dusk. Dusk means when the sun sets. This is when the sun sets. And even that's hard for us, right? Fasting is such a day. So anyway, he was fasting for a long time, and it came time for him to break the fast. And who comes along but a Brahmin? And the Brahmin asked for some food, so he gives him some food. And then other living entities came along. There was actually, in addition to the Brahmana, there was a shooter, a dog with a man with his dogs. And he ended up giving up all of his food. And eventually he gave up all of his water just to receive his guests nicely. And then he said after that, he said, if I can perform this austerity and relieve the suffering of others, this is the perfection of my life. I'm just paraphrasing his consciousness at that point. So such was his attitude of reception towards guests. And then you, of course, you have Maharaj Shivi, too. Maharaj Shivi is famous because there was a pigeon that was being chased by a hawk. And the hawk wanted to eat the pigeon. And the pigeon came to him and said, please give me shelter. He was his guest. And what happened? As Maharaj Shivi gave the pigeon shelter, and it came to the point that the hawk would not accept, because the hawk also said, you have to do me the right too. You can't actually offend me. I'm your guest. So it came to the point that Maharaj Shivi was ready to offer his own flesh, and was offering his own flesh to the hawk according to the weight of the pigeon. You all know that story, right? And then it was revealed that the hawk and the pigeon, I think it was Agni, Dev, and Indra, they had taken that particular guise in order to test the hospitality of Maharaj Shivi. And Maharaj Shivi was blessed, and his body was made whole again because he had received the guests nicely. So that's even with non-Vaishnavas. You know, just receiving a pigeon or a hawk or receiving a Brahmin or a man, a chandala, or a man with dogs. Can you imagine that? And what to speak of the hospitality we have to show towards Vaishnavas. Of course, the hospitality we show towards Vaishnavas, not only we give them some nice prasadam, sweet words, a sitting place, but if someone is actually a pure devotee, we have to do what they say. You know, if they ask for something, and I'll give you two examples of that in a second. If they ask for something, we have to do it, even if it's painful. And, of course, a typical example of that is Dasarath. Dasarath, of course, is the father of Lord Ram. And he, of course, was very attached to Lord Ram. He couldn't live without Lord Ram. And who came to his doorstep or the palace? That was Vishwamitra Muni. And Vishwamitra Muni, he was received very nicely by Dasarath. And Dasarath said, what can we do for you? Anything you want, we'll do. My kingdom is yours. In fact, even the kings used to offer their kingdoms to the sages, especially at the time of the sacrifice. They would say, whatever you want, we'll give you. Here's my whole kingdom. And of course, the sages, not being materially interested, would give the kingdom back to the king. So therefore, Dasarath said that, you know, whatever you want. And then we know Vishwamitra Muni said, I want your son. And Ram was only 16 years old at that time. And I want your son to defend this sacrifice that I'm performing. I have taken a vow of silence, so I can't really, or renunciation from anger, so I can't really defend the sacrifice myself. Because these two demons, Marich and Sabahu, were attacking Vishwamitra's sacrifice. They were throwing like pus and stool and bones, and that really defiles the sacrifice, right? Just like the sacrifice that Indrajit was performing to become so powerful that no one could defeat him, we found that the monkeys, they actually passed urine on that sacrifice to stop the sacrifice, and so Indrajit wasn't able to complete his sacrifice, and eventually he was killed by Lakshman. So in the same way, Vishwamitra Muni was asking for Ram so that Ram could take care of these two demons. And Dasarath, he said, take me, take my soldiers, anybody, but I can't give you Ram. And Vishwamitra Muni got very angry at that particular point, and he said, I thought that everybody in your dynasty kept their promises. And then he talked about many of the predecessors of Dasarath, because he came in the Sun Dynasty, coming from Vivaswan. So many, many great pure devotees appeared in that dynasty, like Bhagirath, who was able to bring down the Ganges. You know, he gave the whole history of the different predecessors, our ancestors, in that dynasty. And he said, look, you're the first one who hasn't kept his promise. Because that's another point. Once you make a promise, you're supposed to keep it. A vow or a promise is meant to be kept. That's the principle of truthfulness. So then what happened is that he got very angry, and he got ready to walk away, you know, just out of anger. And that's a maha offense against a pure devotee. And he was a pure devotee at that time. I mean, previously, Vishwamitra Muni wasn't a pure devotee because he had been fighting with Vasishtha Muni. And eventually, after many, many years of austerities and then problems in executing his devotional service, such as being entrapped by Menaka and giving way to anger in different ways, he became a pure devotee. So Dasarath was going to offend a pure devotee by not giving a pure devotee what he wanted. And Vasishtha Muni said to Dasarath that, don't worry, your son will definitely be protected by Vishwamitra Muni. He's a great Brahma Rishi. He had achieved that particular status. So therefore Dasarath gave his son to Vishwamitra Muni. And of course, there was the whole story of the Ramayana after that particular point. So he even gave his own son away. Similarly, we find that in the case of Lord Nityananda, whose father was Hadai Pandit, and Lord Nityananda and Hadai Pandit were completely inseparable. I mean, practically speaking, Hadai Pandit couldn't bear a moment's separation from Lord Nityananda. But then a sannyasi came to the house. And the sannyasi said to Hadai Pandit, I don't have any brahmachari assistant right now, so give me your son. And so Hadai Pandit, even though it was, practically speaking, it was the most miserable experience for him, because separation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was his son, he gave his son away. And his Lord Nityananda, at a very young age, traveled with this personality, the sannyasi. And of course, then after that, Lord Nityananda went on his own and wandered over all the holy places, and eventually came, after being in Vrindavan, eventually came to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Navadvip. So there are some stories about this hospitality and how important hospitality. In fact, you have the injunction, Atithi Narayan. Atithi Narayan means that someone who comes, even without an appointment, you know, Atithi means like an appointment or a time, specifically time, just like we call the tithis of the month, that is the days of the month, there's the Ekadasi, Dwadasi, etc. So one who comes without an appointment is to be considered like the Supreme Personality of Godhead coming to your home. And we find those who are raised in India especially have this culture that's inculcated in them from their very birth. Just like I just came from Fiji and other places where I've been dealing with people who were originally from India, at least their families were from India. And the culture is just amazing. As Prabhupada said about Krishna consciousness, it's what kitchen religion. So in Indian culture, they've actually understood this completely. You go into someone's house, and especially if you're a sannyasi or anyone, you get fed like with so many preparations. Sometimes we sit down and there's like 20, 30, 50 preparations for dinner. Even though we don't even want that, we prefer to have one or two preparations. Just like last night, Yogindra was my host, and he made quinoa soup for me. One preparation. Now, there were a few other things, something else on the side, some salad on the side. And it was very nice. And very, very nice. We enjoyed it. But when you go to people's houses that have this culture, they won't be satisfied giving you one preparation. Even if you insist on it. Even if you tell them, just one preparation, just some quinoa. Then you still, they won't listen to you. And then also, as they're serving you, they won't stop serving you until you actually literally put your hands on top of your plate and say, stop, or bas, bas, no more. And they say, just a little more, just a little. And they keep insisting, practically a fight. Whereas in the Western world, we don't have that culture so much. I mean, at least in America. Some other countries, they have that culture. Like if you go to Afghanistan, even in the middle of the war, they have that culture. But especially in India, even if you go to the poorest village in India, and I'm not talking about the big cities like Mumbai or other places like that, where people are more westernized, people will give you the shirt off of their back or the roti, you know, their last roti, just out of hospitality. And there's a real warmth there that you experience. And in the Western world, we don't have that culture, at least here in America, as I said, we don't have that culture. If you go to someone's house, first of all, you got to make an appointment like 3 months in advance. And then you're lucky if you get spaghetti. And people don't know how to cook, you know. So, is it all? But in India, in the culture, cooking is actually an essential part of training. That's why when we join the Krishna Consciousness Movement, first thing we learned practically was how to cook. You know, the Vedic preparations that Prabhupada taught us. We learned how to spice the way Prabhupada did, which is very hot chaunts so that everybody runs out of the temple. Every time you throw the chaunts into the dal. You've experienced that, Yogi? Everybody's coughing. And even down the street, 2 blocks away, everybody's coughing in the street. The chaunts are so heavy because you've thrown so much red peppers, you know, hot peppers, chilies into it. So that was the training we got from Prabhupada in hospitality. Someone comes to the temple, just like the Sunday feast. That's a typical time when we're supposed to be the hosts. Although many devotees, because of the lack of culture, don't understand that. Many devotees come to the Sunday feast. The guests, they put the guests last, right? Yeah. I've seen that, many temples. I'm not criticizing this temple or any temple in particular. I mean, I was just in, even in Fiji, where people raised in the Indian culture, the younger devotees have not imbibed it so much. So when it comes time to the Sunday feast, the younger devotees go first, and all the guests go second. And it's a terrible example of Krishna consciousness. I mean, even if you go into a church, people understand that you're supposed to treat the guests nicely. I went one time to a Mormon service, and they treated me like I was God there. You know, they said, oh, Mr. Swami, because I introduced myself as Swami, I was dressed in a dhoti, and said, oh, how are you? And they put their arm on me. You know, men, not women. You know, the women didn't put their arm on me. But the men, they said, oh, how are you? Is there anything we can do for you? Oh, welcome. And they introduced me to everybody. Oh, so the culture even was there. And what to speak of, in many of our temples, we've forgotten that culture. So what happened in Fiji, in order to teach the devotees about it, I actually served the Sunday feast. Not only to show them how we should be hosts, but also to make sure none of them ate food first. I patrolled the line, too. I said, none of you are going to eat. I'm here watching you. And you wait until the guests eat. And it was one of the most enjoyable experiences I had in a long time. Not patrolling the devotees, that's not enjoyable. But in serving the guests. Because as I was serving the guests, I was understanding the consciousness that a host has to have. You know, I was smiling, I was handing out the Mahaprasadam. And these are all people from India, so they know what Mahaprasadam is. So I said, oh, Mahaprasadam, and they were smiling, and I was smiling back. It was so enjoyable. It was like Prabhupada describes in the Upadeshamrita, Dadati Pratigranati Guyoma Kyati Prichati Pumte Pujate Chaiva. In other words, giving food, and they were accepting food. So it was a loving exchange. It was much more enjoyable than eating. You know, you think eating is enjoyable. I mean, honoring prasadam is good. I mean, it's enjoyable. But even more enjoyable is to serve others. So I was enjoying that Sunday feast, just serving the others and giving them mahaprasadam and going out. And people were just astounded. They're saying, oh, how can a sannyasi serve? You know, there's this whole consciousness that as you advance in Krishna consciousness, you don't have to serve anymore. Yeah, whether you're, you know, not only a guru, but, you know, just even temple president, you know. Of course, Yogi's a good example. He's serving everybody, and he serves the deities. But there's this whole consciousness. Yeah, I remember, especially in Venezuela, I remember it was like that, too. You know, when you're a new bhakti, you got to serve everybody else. But as you move up the totem pole, or pecking order, whatever you call it, then you get some position. I remember in Venezuela, we had to get, there was someone who was given the position in charge of the bathroom, you know. Because I don't know if you remember that. Just because, but that's not Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness is the higher you go, the more you serve. The more you're a servant. The more you realize that you're a servant. So I really enjoy that. I mean, I'd like to serve out every Sunday feast. You know, why not give me some enjoyment? Just like even Krishna. Krishna's enjoying as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he understands the servant is enjoying more than him. And so therefore, Krishna appears as who? Who does Krishna appear as?
Mahaprabhu.
Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya. Because that's one of the esoteric reasons for Lord Chaitanya's advent, is that Lord Chaitanya is seeing that his devotees, especially Srimati Radharani, is enjoying more than the Supreme Enjoyer. So everyone wants to become the Supreme Enjoyer, but if you really want to enjoy, you become a servant of 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 the Supreme Enjoyer. And that was the realization I had. So in other words, dasa, 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 no dasa. So by this culture of hospitality, and we all need to learn it, you know, I need to learn it, and we all need to learn it, and we need to learn how to serve prasadam, too, and cook prasadam. Cooking prasadam is actually very, very important. Everyone in the movement should learn how to cook. Prabhupada said only a lazy man can't cook. You know, people say, well, I can't cook. I don't know how to cook. Nonsense. In the beginning days, we all learned how to cook, and we were all... Was the stage still here? No, he had to go, I guess. Because he would confirm what I just said. And then people came to the temple. And if there was no prasadam left after all the guests ate, that was okay. You know, because there was an anxiety. Sometimes we were new devotees and we're in anxiety. What if there's no glubjamins left? What if all the guests take glubjamins? And sometimes, you know, we keep some in our pockets in case. In a plastic bag, obviously. You know, otherwise, you know, you'd be all gooey in the pocket. So the consciousness is, yes, so when people come for the Sunday feast, we serve them and we sit down and talk to them, ask them if they need anything. Don't preach heavy to them. You know, that's another thing, you know, devotees come. When I first came to the temple, they preached heavy to me, and I didn't come back for 2 years because of that. They told me I was going to hell. There was this one devotee, Amarendra, who some of you may know.
Christian influence.
No, he didn't have a Christian. He was Jewish. it had nothing to do with his Jewish or influence. It was because he was a student radical before he joined the movement. So he took up Krishna consciousness with the same mood of student radicalism, you know, like preaching from a soapbox. So I came into the temple, and he told us, first thing I got told was that if you don't join this Hare Krishna movement immediately, you're going to be short as a dwarf, live in a cave, eating human flesh. You know, the end of Kali Yuga is coming. The she-jackal is vomiting fire. I mean, it's just like... I remember every word he said like it was yesterday. You know, from the Bhagavatam, the symptoms of Kali Yuga... She jackals a vomiting fire. I remember exactly how he said it. And so, you know, that's great hospitality. So then, from then on, I avoided devotees for 2 years. And it took Prabhupada to convince me to, you know, to actually join the Hare Krishna movement. Otherwise, I just thought, well, I've overdosed on Krishna consciousness. Or burnt out on Krishna consciousness. So, yeah, it was actually Prabhupada. Then also another time I went to the temple, they wouldn't even let me read Prabhupada's books. I picked up one of Prabhupada's books, and basically, it was Upanishad. And I was reading, and the devotee said, "You'll never understand that. You know, you have to hear from me about it." I said, "Can I read, please?" And then kept preaching, you know, "You're not the body. You know, this, you're that. You know, you have to surrender, give up everything. Why do you have that long hair?" You know, I was attached to my long hair. So that's not exactly hospitality. So if we want to make devotees in the Krishna conscious movement, we have to show this Vaishnava. Someone comes to the temple, you give them a prasanna immediately. Even you can stomp the deity worship if there's no one else in the temple. You know, you have to give them something to receive someone nicely. And people will remember that. First impressions are lasting impressions, right? You know, when someone first said, just that impression of the Krishna conscious movement has lasted with me for the last 50 years, whatever period of time it was. So when people come, they have to be perfect hosts and serve them. They should be so overwhelmed and give them nice prasadam, sweets, or whatever. You know, if they don't want sweets, we should give them, you know, some sprouts or something like that. They have to be vegans. Or whatever they want. You serve people according to the way they want. And then we'll be pleasing Krishna, the Lord in the heart, and we'll be pleasing the person, and then we'll make many, many devotees. So anyway, so this is the principle here. Of course, we don't have to treat everyone like a pure devotee. In other words, we don't have to listen to whatever they say. You know, if someone says, "Please bring me some marijuana," we don't do that. But if someone is a pure devotee, they won't say, "Please bring me some marijuana." And it's interesting, you go to Vrindavan sometimes, and they take marijuana as being Mahaprasad. One time I was circumambulating a temple of Lord Shiva in, Chakaleshwar Mahadev, that's in the center of Govardhan, in the Manasi Ganga. And I was circumambulating, and the sadhus behind were smoking, I think it was hashish, not even marijuana, these big, big things that they rolled. And they said, "Oh, Maharaj, here's Mahaprasadam for you." At least they were good hosts. You know, they were offering what they felt was the best to me. Mahaprasadam. Yeah, of course, Lord Shiva doesn't accept it. He said, "Mahaprasadam, Maharaj. Come join with us. You know, we're all sannyasis having a good time. So sit down and take prasad, you know." Sarira, Vijaya, Jachendriya, Tehikala. Yeah, no. So, actually, that's also, there's an etiquette of being a guest, too. You know, you don't say, "Maya." You know, I didn't say Maya to them. I just said, "Well, it's a Kadashi, you know. Any other day would be fine." But I'm fasting today. So, you know, I have an excuse for everything. So, anyway, so even there was the etiquette there of accepting or interacting properly with a guest and a host. So we have to learn that. That's culture. That's really an important aspect of culture. Even our enemy, Prabhupada said, even if your enemy comes to your home, he shouldn't suspect that he's your enemy. Even when Krishna came with Bhimsen and Arjuna to Jarasandha, to kill Jarasandha, and Bhimsen was fighting with Jarasandha every day, I think it was 28 days or something like that. Every night they would sit like pals together at the dinner table. Can you imagine that? I mean, it's hard for me to understand that Kshatriya Dharma. But every night they would sit and they would just like, I guess they would drink or whatever they did. And they weren't treated like enemies at that time. So when your enemy comes and you're fighting them during the day, at least at night you should be nice to them. So such is culture. You understand? This is culture. So any questions or comments about these points? Oh, yeah, one other point I wanted to make about the demigods. Because this is an important point for the devotees, that many times we may criticize improperly the demigods That is also an offense on chanting given by some of the acharyas. The offense to consider the names of the demigods equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu, that's one way of taking it. Another way that offense is explained is disrespecting the demigods. They are servants of Vishnu. So one thing I do when I'm preaching to people who are attached to demigod worship, which is specifically people from India, I mean, in America, very few people are attached to demigod worship. But in India, they are. I mean, you go on people's altar, there's Bhadrakali, there's Ganesh, there's Shiva, Lord Shiva, there's Lakshmi, especially Lakshmi. Everyone likes Lakshmi. And so instead of saying, get rid of them all, and offending the people because they have some history, family history, I say, fine, if you leave them on the altar, at least the pure devotee of demigods, leave them on the altar, but put them at a lower level and worship them as devotees. You know, too often devotees, I mean, we just had this big argument about, in our temple, about Shivaratri. In North Carolina, we do celebrate Shivaratri, but we worship Lord Shiva as a devotee. Even in the Krishna book, you find the story where Nanda Maharaj sometimes would celebrate Shivaratri because he worshipped Lord Shiva as a Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu. So you can worship the demigods, if you like, as great devotees of the Lord. At least the demigods who are pure devotees, like Yamaraj, pure devotee. You can worship Yamaraj. I've never seen him on anyone's altar. But still, if you want, you can put him, Lord Shiva or any of these devotees, but put them on a lower level with the acharyas. And you can worship them if you're really attached to that. I mean, don't put Indra on your altar because he's not a pure devotee. I mean, Indra has a lot of issues with ladies, so to speak. But any of the pure devotee demigods, why not? Not that I'm advocating it, but if someone is attached to that, there's no problem with that. You can celebrate Shivaratri. If you have the right attitude. If the wrong attitude is, as Krishna describes, avidhi purvakam. He says those who are attached to the demigod, worship the demigods in the wrong way. That's avidhi purvakam. It's a wrong thing. It's avidhi. It's against the rules.
Would you bathe Shiva Linda?
Why not? Why not? I mean, Lord Shiva is a great devotee of Krishna. I bathe the Shiva Linga many times. I'm not saying advocating where you should do it or how you should do it, then that requires some discussion. But Lord Shiva is a great devotee of Krishna. I mean, just like we would bathe Prabhupada on Prabhupada's appearance day, don't we? I mean, at least I've done it. And you know, I go to people's houses and they bathe my feet. And I'm just a rascal. You know, bathing some, like, demon's feet in the other house. Well, at least I'm externally representing Srila Prabhupada. So, you know, they're giving respect to Srila Prabhupada and his movement. So if I can allow people to bathe my feet, you know, in Indian culture, then why shouldn't, you know, we sometimes bathe Lord Shiva, right? Why not? I mean, he's a pure devotee. He's not even a regular, he's not a jiva soul. I mean, he's a special category of his own. And even you have in the Ramayana, Lord Ram was worshipping Lord Shiva. Isn't it? Yeah. I mean, there's so many examples of that. However, Lord Shiva's worship is a devotee. That's the difference. I mean, just like with Prabhupada. If we worship Prabhupada as God, that's the same thing as worshiping the demigods as God. And at one time, there were some rascal devotees who were saying that Prabhupada was God. I remember that. Some of you may have been in the movement at that time. They were in New Vrindavan, and there were four sannyasis. There were sannyasis who said, Prabhupada is God. And everyone started, because people hadn't read so many of Prabhupada's books at that time, so they started to get very confused. Oh, Prabhupada is God and he's displeased with us, that's why he's gone back to India. That's there in the Leelamrita, that story. So that's hard. The Prabhupada was so disturbed, he kicked those sannyasis out of the Hare Krishna movement. And eventually they came back after much repentance and preaching and service to Srila Prabhupada. But that is horrible. Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahma Rudra Adi Daivata Samitra Viksheka Sapa Sandi Bhavat Dhruvam. Anyone who considers the demigods or devotees to be equal to Lord Vishnu, in every sense, that means that someone's a Pashandi. Even we find sometimes people think the pure devotee has the same qualities as Vishnu, like omniscience, for example. You know, so I was reading, someone was preaching that Prabhupada was omniscient, in the same sense that Krishna is omniscient. How is that possible? I mean, the pure devotee, in one sense, can be considered omniscient because whatever Krishna wants him to know, he'll know. But he doesn't know everything. I mean, what would you do if you found a pure devotee who didn't know how to fix your car? Would that be a disqualification? You know, didn't know which wire went to which spark plug. You know, because he's not omniscient, you don't even know that. But Krishna knows how to fix your car, but don't ask him to do it. Krishna knows everything. All science, all engineering, everything Krishna knows. Krishna knows all medicine. But the pure devotee is dependent on Krishna. You know, when we say that, another thing mentioned here in this verse, purport, we say, Yasmin Vigate Sarvamevam Vigatam Bhavati, one who knows Krishna knows everything. It doesn't mean he knows all the details of everything, but he knows the purpose of everything. You understand what I mean? It's not that one who knows Krishna knows 100% of everything. He knows what, like, I don't know what Balaram Avaduta is thinking right now. Thank God. Yeah. I thank God I don't know everything. Yeah. There's enough, knowing what I know is enough to drive me crazy. And getting emails, I mean, this morning I got one email. Some information about something, more anxiety in my service. You know, sometimes I wish I knew less. Like those monkeys, what? See no evil, hear no evil, and speak no evil. But that's not my service. So, any other questions or comments?
I have a question, Maharaj, about welcoming a guest and reading Mahabharata. Again, now, sometimes when someone comes, they offer a drink of milk and honey and ghee called A-R-G-Y-A.
Argya. It's called Argya. Yeah, yeah, supposed to be offered that. That's part of the deity worship, too. You know about that, Yogendra, right?
Yeah, but we don't make that particular offer.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to do that, but if you look in the deity worship book, it actually mentions that. You offer Argya. And so, it's not that necessarily you have to offer that, but you should offer at least, Prabhupada said, at least a sitting place and some water when a guest comes. But there was an interesting story I just read where, see if I remember, it was about, it's another Visramita Muni story where, see if I remember, no, I don't remember all the details, where he asked the king for everything. What was that story where he tested that king? What was the king's name again? Does anyone remember the story? The king had to become like working in a
That was Harishchandra.
Harishchandra, yeah. Yeah, he asked Harishchandra, and he basically took away Harishchandra's kingdom. And he tested him that way, right?
Yeah.
Harishchandra had to work in a crematorium eventually. And he had to sell his wife. I'm not advocating that. Anyway, so he was tested. His hospitality and truthfulness was actually tested by Visramita Muni. You know that story, right? So, of course, I don't think any of us would pass that test. But it was. But sometimes the Lord will test us, like with the Marashivi and the pigeon and the hawk. He was tested in the same way. Or Ranti Dev. He was tested. So because you're actually receiving Krishna. Someone is a representative of Krishna. Krishna is in everyone's heart. So So, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're only going to get veg here. That's nice. Yeah, we have to be cautious. I mean, not here, you don't have to be. But when people travel around the world, they have to be cautious. Because sometimes you go to a vegetarian restaurant, sometimes it means eggs.
Yeah.
And sometimes even fish, you know. And they say, well, it's a vegetarian restaurant. I said, why are you serving eggs? Or why are you serving fish? Well, they're water vegetables. That's what they say in Bengal.
Chicken broth.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the Maharani's good karma is spreading so much because everyone at my work knows I'm a vegetarian, and so they'll come to me and sometimes they're like, Linda, we were at this place today. It's a whole vegetarian restaurant, you know, and they're going on and on and on, and I look at them, I'm like, good karma? Yeah.
Wow.
Everybody talks about it.
Yeah, restaurants are extremely important. And we were just speaking to Nichananda from Dallas. Not the Nichananda from here, but the Nichananda from Dallas. And they have this restaurant called the Chandris there. And they have, you know, the politicians come and eat there, movie stars, actresses. They eat there, and our movies become very popular by that restaurant. I mean, eventually, we were talking about opening. There should be some restaurants in New Orleans, too.
2 weeks ago, Diana Ross was playing at one of the casinos on the Gulf Coast, and she got her lunch from Good Karma in Ocean Springs.
Did she go there, or they delivered it?
No, she sent
somebody there.
Oh.
It would have been kind of a mob scene, maybe, or something.
Yeah.
She's pretty famous.
Too bad she didn't go there. Could have had pictures of her there. That's what they do at many restaurants. They have pictures of famous people who came there with their signature at the bottom. So, yeah, so Prashada and the way Maharani runs then, she's a great hostess.
Yeah.
You know, people come in. I mean, part of it, perhaps even more important than the food is the attitude in which it's served. You know, you come in and talking about Fiji again, they used to, before I told them how to serve the Sunday feast, they used to just throw the food on people's plates, you know. It's just like, all right, here's your food. Hope you don't want any more. You know, because they don't say that. But that was the attitude, you know. And they just throw it anywhere. You ever see that? Sometimes at the Sunday feast, they'll put your subji on top of your glubjaman.
I do it so right at home, but then at the Sunday feast,
I don't know. They don't understand that the Sunday feast, if you're actually devotees, especially initiated devotees, this is your home. And you're serving your guest. It's not that you're a guest at the Hare Krishna temple anymore. I mean, you're a guest 3 or 4 times. After that, it's your home.
In Manusmriti, it's very detailed. Description of how to receive guests,
yeah.
and the personality of the atithi, and all this. Why do you not have Manusmriti?
Prabhupada said to follow all the injunctions of Manusmriti, you'd faint if you knew all the injunctions. So we just have to give a basic, you know, all Manusmriti. Then we'd be torturing people sometimes, you know, to punish them. Certain things. Yeah.
At the same time, those devotees who are already advanced to some level, I mean, they should read.
Oh, yeah, they should read the Manusmriti. But if Prabhupada pretty much summarized in his teachings the teaching of the Manusmriti, because it's actually quite lengthy, and there's certain injunctions about punishing criminals and things like that.
That
really we don't want to get into at this point, because we'd be cutting off parts of people's bodies and. It's really not so kosher. I mean, certain parts may not be applicable right now, so so Prabhupada presented. The main thing is hospitality, having the right attitude. I mean, what you give people is another thing, but having the right attitude towards people when they come. That here, yeah.
This is the right attitude. This is how we should act. At least this part that
yeah.
we as a guest, we should
have. All right, so you take that excerpt and give it to us so we can read it to people. But I read the Bhagavatam, and the Bhagavatam says if you don't treat the guest properly or have the right attitude, then your eyeballs will be plucked out by the vultures in hell. That's enough to scare people. But we should be doing it out of love. The point is when people come, we should love the people who come. We should thank them. Thank you for coming to the temple. I mean, how often do we have that attitude? And how many people have we driven away from the Krishna consciousness movement?
My Guru Maharaj said he was in Los Angeles once, and there was a guest there, a man that, you know, he tries to be real. And so he was just chatting with the man, and then something came up like, oh, is this your first visit? He said, no, I've been coming for weeks, but you're the first person that's
talked to me. Yeah. I mean, in other religions, like the Mormons have learned that. I mean, what we do is when people come for the first time, during the Sunday feast, we ask who's here for the first time, they raise their hands, we give them a Bhagavad Gita, we let them go first in line, and we have them taken care of very specially. Like that, I mean, this is the way we can make devotees. Like, I remember the Sunday feast, in the old days, we'd always sit next to the guests, and many of us would eat after they were finished. You remember the Shivgendra?
Eating after they were finished.
Well, at least eating with them.
Yeah, with them.
At least eating with them. But I ate after they were finished because I couldn't pay attention to...
And eat at the same time. It's hard for a lot of time to do that.
Yeah, I couldn't pay attention to relating to them if I was eating at the same time. Especially someone new, you know, and serving them. Do you want anything else? I had to get up and bring them some stuff like that. So, anyway, the consciousness is the main thing. Then we'll make many devotees. And people join the movement generally not because of philosophy, but because they're finding loving exchanges. Prabhupada said our movement expands because of the six loving exchanges. Right? That Prabhupada said that. I mean, you can preach until you're blue in the face, but who's going to join until people experience love?
What are the loving exchanges?
Giving prasadam, accepting prasadam, giving gifts, accepting gifts, and revealing one's mind and confidence, and also be ready to hear someone who's revealing, you know, be empathic with someone who's revealing their mind and confidence. Be confidential. In other words, be confidential. That's one other big problem we have is devotees being confidential. Like if I say something to someone, like I say something to Yogendra, you know, I'm just having trouble, I'm eating too many sweet balls. And not true. And the next day he says in class, you know, I just had a talk with Maharaj yesterday. Even he has trouble controlling his tongue. So that's a problem we have in ISKCON. We don't keep confidence. I'm not saying Yogendra would do that. I'm just giving an example. And you hear about all your foibles in class the next day. So we're very reluctant to go to other devotees to reveal our minds. And that's why when devotees have trouble, you know, they have no one to take shelter of. And the trouble grows when you don't have someone to take shelter of. That's the real problem. I think we have to end now, right? And I know the crisis that just occurred. Not personal crisis. Okay, that's it. All glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.